Welcome to the second episode of I Love America and America Hates Me, where my co-host,
Patty Yao,
and I, Jordan Murphy, get into the weeds of democratic electoral systems to try to work out how democratic they really are. In our last episode, we talked about how the American system of first-past-the-post plurality voting fails to create representative government and perpetuates a problematic two-party system that fosters disillusionment and apathy in voters. In this episode, we'll discuss some alternative voting systems and how they just might be able to set us on track to solve some of America's problems.
We're going to address voters' lack of political interest and participation, gerrymandering and minority rule, horse race politics and hyper-negative, non-substantive campaigning, partisanship and polarization, multi-party systems.
So join us as we explore proportional voting, the rest of the democratic world's answer to the difficulties of democracy. Ranked choice voting, also known as single transferable vote, STV, or instant runoff voting, is a form of voting meant to produce more proportional representation in the legislature. How it works is, instead of picking only one candidate or party on the ballot, the voter ranks all of their choices from first to last. After everyone has voted, election officials check to see if anyone has a majority. If someone does, that's great. The election is over and the candidate with the majority wins. If no one does, then we go into an instant runoff election where the candidate or party in last place is removed from the running. Every voter who picked them as their first choice now has a transferable vote that counts toward their second choice. Once the votes have been redistributed, election officials check again to see if anyone has a majority. This process continues until someone does and the election is won. This system, with variations, is used in India, Australia, Ireland, Sri Lanka, and many more countries and sub-constituencies, including a few places in the US. Maine and Alaska, after the success of the 2020 Alaskan ballot initiative, as well as the cities of Santa Fe, Minneapolis, New York City, San Francisco, Oakland, and Berkeley.
So what are the pros of a ranked choice system? Well, as we talked about in our first episode, one of the biggest problems with plurality voting is that it perpetuates a system in which only two parties can win. Seeing the futility of third-party bids, voters think that any votes for them would be wasted and instead vote strategically for what is the lesser of two evils in their eyes. Since they only have to win a plurality of votes rather than a majority, they are really more beholden to the party they represent than to the voters. In a ranked choice system, however, it's the candidate with the broadest appeal who wins. Voters don't have to be strategic about who they're voting for. They can vote for whoever they want, and their vote will never be wasted. And candidates need to convince a majority of all voters, no longer just a plurality from a field of undecided and partisan voters. This could go a long way toward addressing the minority rule that plagues the U.S. representative legislatures.
Ranked choice also has the potential to disincentivize attack campaigns, where candidates and parties portray their opponents in a hyper-negative light. In a ranked choice system, you don't have to convince voters to vote for you over an opponent, necessarily. Just that, overall, you are a better choice than many of the other opponents. Coming off as hyper-negative becomes more of an image risk when you have many other opponents to compete against, and could end up causing you to be ranked even lower in the eyes of many voters. A 2016 study by Donovan, Tolbert, and Gracie, Campaign Civility Under Preferential and Plurality Voting, found that voters in cities with ranked choice voting are actually much more satisfied with the conduct of local campaigns and view campaigns as less negative. Ranked choice has an interesting history of attempted implementation in the U.S. In 2002, Barack Obama actually introduced legislation to implement ranked choice in Illinois as a state senator, which ended up failing. In the same year, John McCain, who, as you may remember, ran against Obama in 2008, campaigned for a ranked choice ballot measure in Arizona, which also failed. While a ranked choice ballot measure passed in Alaska in November of 2020, another failed in Massachusetts.
So why is ranked choice controversial? California governors Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom have actually both vetoed ranked choice ballot measures, with Brown once describing the system as overly complicated and confusing for voters. Concerns include an increased amount of incorrectly filled out ballots that might have to be discarded. And if that candidate wins a majority, it may be a faux majority composed of many voters who ranked the candidate as their second or third choice. But these concerns are unfounded. In regards to the former, A 2015 Fair Vote study found that on average, 0.05% of ballots in ranked choice elections in the U.S. are discarded. This is, yes, a fair amount larger than the 0.01% that are discarded in first-past-the-post elections. Very few elections, however, are decided by a 0.05% margin, and that 0.05% should not be skewed towards any particular candidate or party. We argue that these discarded ballots will not functionally make a difference for a vast majority of elections. Additionally, the number of discarded ballots should decrease as voters come to understand ranked choice better. In regards to the latter concern of a faux majority, we will pose the question, what makes a first-past-the-post election, decided by a majority of voters choosing strategically, subjected to waste-of-vote logic, any more valid? Many first-past-the-post winners don't even win a majority, only a plurality. Isn't a winner certified by a ranked choice majority better than no majority at all?
Ranked choice voting is a fairer system that provides voters with more options and allows independent and unaffiliated candidates to run for office without being labeled spoilers. Voters won't think of a vote for a third-party candidate as wasted, and so they won't try to vote strategically and leave third-party candidates out. Theoretically, this sets the stage for third parties to bid for voters openly and more effectively until we no longer think of them as third, but just another party in a multi-party system. As we discussed in our first episode, we argue that a multi-party system is a much fairer and representative system than America's duopoly, and that a system which opens the door for it is a step in the right direction.
We can imagine the bid for voters like a capitalist system. If the market is a monopoly, we would only have one politician running for office, whom we have to accept regardless of their policies, views, or past actions. A little disturbing. First past the post would likely leave us with an oligopoly, or more specifically, a duopoly. We have two choices. There's a bit more competition between the candidates than in the monopoly, but the two still hold all of the market power. The consumers, or citizens, are forced to choose between the two, which, as we discussed previously, is not the most representative method. On the other hand, ranked choice voting, which encourages a multi-party system, creates more and more competition in the politicians' market. This promotes higher quality politicians who aim to represent a majority of the citizens.
A common criticism of American elections, which I think is apt, is that we think of politics a lot like we think of horse races. Who's pulling ahead? What the odds are that the underdog will pull up from behind? The merit of ranked choice is the complex system of contingencies that it creates for paths to victory, which make the horse race type of election coverage much less appealing and meaningful. And what if we could finally put horse race coverage aside and turn to substance and background, policy and platforms? This, like the decreased incentive for hypernegativity that ranked choice creates, has the potential to keep voters' minds open and make the American political landscape less polarized.
On that note, ranked choice also has the potential to help us address the decline of bipartisanship that the U.S. has faced in the last 30 years or so. Under the plurality system, there is a reward for towing the party line. You keep the voters and support that you have. And punishment for breaking it. You might lose the support of party establishment, which might be detrimental in a system with no reward for getting anything less than a plurality. You might also look like a hypocrite for going against the strong values you campaigned on, diametrically opposed to your opponent, by cooperating with the other party. But ranked choice creates incentive to cooperate with other legislators. You can broaden your appeal and maybe form a coalition for more efficient decision-making. Voters like someone who knows how to get things done. And in a world where politics isn't strictly us versus them, cooperation is great for your image. So beyond ranked choices, many democratic systems use a form of proportional representation known as party lists. There are a lot of variations of this, but the basic idea is that voters are picking a party rather than a specific candidate, and congressional or parliamentary seats are allocated to parties based on the total proportion of votes that they get in the country or state.
Party list systems can be open list, closed list, or localized list. In all cases, the party selects the candidates using their own processes. This type of system is used by the European Parliament, Finland, Latvia, Sweden, the Netherlands, Spain, Norway, and Austria, to name a few. With an open list, the list of candidates is placed on the ballot and voters are choosing between different parties' lists. With a closed list, voters are only choosing parties, with the candidates not disclosed or to be decided later. In both of these systems, if districts exist, they are rendered vestigial. Geographical representation is no longer a factor, and the legislative representative is representing a country or state as a whole. In a localized system, however, constituencies are divided by region and the candidates assigned to them. The winner of the district is then chosen by plurality, but the winner does not necessarily become the representative. We're still assigning total seats to parties based on their statewide vote share. Once the party knows how many seats it has won, it assigns representatives to districts based on who won each district by the highest share of votes.
Between party-less systems and first-past-the-post lies the mixed-member proportional, or MMP, representation system. Like other proportional systems, the goal here is to even out congressional representation to ensure that legislative seats reflect votes. But in this case, voters vote for two things separately on the ballot, a candidate and a party. Half of the total seats are filled by candidates who win a plurality. These are constituency candidates. And the other half are filled using a party list. MMP is used in New Zealand, Bolivia, Germany, Lesotho, Scotland, Wales, the City of London, South Korea, Ethiopia, and Thailand. South Africa uses a system combining MMP and ranked choice.
The biggest pro of both of these systems is that they prevent minority rule. No more districts decided by clever gerrymandering, because districts cease to matter. Representatives are meant to work for everyone and are accountable to everyone come re-election time, too. These systems, like ranked choice, also favor political diversity by breaking down wasted vote logic and disincentivizing strategic voting. Under MMP, voters may still vote strategically for constituency candidates, but every vote for a party list counts much more because you no longer have to win districts to be represented. Just have a significant enough total number of votes. As with ranked choice, elections using a variation of a party list tend to have healthy multi-party systems representing more diverse ideologies and constituencies.
A big flaw of proportional voting systems is that they tend to lack the nuance and assurances of geographical representation. And this has the potential effect of tyranny of the majority, wherein a majority of the people use the democratic system to take away the rights of a minority. We think, though, looking at all the functional proportionally representative systems in the world, it's safe to say that John Stuart Mill's on liberty fears were a bit unfounded. Tyranny of the majority has not plagued the world as it might have. Though majorities certainly do override minorities in every election, this has not been a destructive force to democracy because of abundant institutional safeguards such as separation of powers, checks and balances, and etc. Political scientist Robert Dahl, in his 1989 work, Democracy and Its Critics, argue effectively that the threat of tyranny of the majority is a spurious argument. If a majority were to use the powers invested to them by a democracy to violate democratic principles, then the state would no longer be much of a democracy anymore, would it?
All of today's functioning democracies have institutional safeguards in attempts to prevent such a thing from happening. That is not to say that tyranny of the majority does not occur, it does all the time, but it is just as common, if not more, in the United States' first-past-the-post system as it is in proportionally representative systems. The question of tyranny of the majority is not solved with geographical representation, but with strong institutional constructs to prevent minority rights. The bigger threat in our eyes, and the one that proportional representation solves, is tyranny of the minority. We think that the threat of a minority of voters deciding things for a majority is entirely against the most basic of democratic principles.
And so what if we were to institute either of these reforms, ranked choice, party-less voting, or a combination of both, as in South Africa? And we got the more proportional democratic representation that Jordan and I are arguing for. Practically, we've been treating this outcome as synonymous with the emergence of a multi-party system. Proportional representation doesn't always lead to thriving multi-party systems. Australia uses ranked choice voting and functionally has a two-party grouping with some outliers. But as we have argued, it does remove the biggest barriers to creating a multi-party system.
But multi-party systems have their own problems that we would then have to face. One of the biggest is the necessity of party coalitions. As no party has a majority of seats, they must form alliances with other parties in order to accomplish anything. Sometimes coalitions make for odd bedfellows. Examples of this abound, but to name a couple, Austria is currently being governed by a coalition of environmentalists and social conservatives, and Italy is controlled by a coalition of center leftists and the populist Five Star Movement. Sometimes these pairings work just fine, but sometimes they fall apart, often catastrophically. Theresa May knows a little something about that. Yes, coalition government is hard, but you'll be hard-pressed to find anyone who thinks that American congressional partisan gridlock is working any better. The thing about coalition government is that historically it has been an extremely effective tool at breaking political stalemates, and that's exactly what we have on our hands. Proportional representation isn't exactly on the mainstream radar right now in the US, but people are thinking about it. As we discussed, Alaska has just voted to join Maine and implement ranked choice voting on a statewide level. In the same year, though, Massachusetts voters shot ranked choice down. Voting systems under the U.S. Constitution fall under the jurisdiction of the states. There would have to be individual measures in each state to implement proportional representation systems on a national level. That sounds like a faraway goal, but we don't think it's implausible. First past the post is a normative system, and norms change all the time. We're living in a world that is currently demonstrating to us in almost every feasible way how malleable it really is. Changing voting systems in America, like changing most everything else, is a matter of changing minds.
We hope we've convinced you that the first-past-the-post system does not produce effective democracy, and that proportionally representative systems could be just what the U.S. needs to address its growing democratic challenges. And we hope that you'll take this information into consideration the next time you vote, especially if you're voting on how to vote.
I'm Jordan.
And I'm Patty.
And this has been I Love America and America Hates Me, a Berkeley Political Review production.